Shabbos, Perek Yud Aleph, Mishnah Beis, 11:2. The first word in the Mishnah is ketzad, which would mean how do we illustrate or explain or under what circumstances does the previous halacha apply. So if we leave that ketzad in, we're coming to explain how in the previous Mishnah we said the Chachamim exempted one from throwing through the Rishus HaRabim, and now we're going to explain that a little more. Many don't have this word ketzad in at all. The proper girsas leave the word ketzad out, and this Mishnah stands on its own, not elaborating on the previous Mishnah, which is really the straightforward reading of the Mishnah. And in this Mishnah, we're focused primarily on a new thing called moshet, and not really on zrika, on throwing, like the previous Mishnah. So moshet is handing over, and if you recall, the base of all the malachas is what went on in the midbar, in the desert, is part of the construction and assembly and maybe even the functioning of the Mishkan. Now, you'll also recall that I said back in the very beginning of the first Mishnah that Hotzah, transferring, is considered by Tosos, it says a malacha gerua, almost like a second-class citizen malacha. And part of the reason is because, unlike the other malachas where one is clearly investing his creative capacity to transform the world by cooking or tearing or weaving, whatever the story is, when it comes to Hotzah, transferring, the world isn't really being transformed the same way. There's just sort of a relocation of some object. But part of it being a malacha gerua, a secondary, like a lower, inferior malacha, is that inferior, good translation, inferior malacha, is that we can't extrapolate so far and wide and extensively in the realm of Hotzah as one can with other malachas. So in other malachas, if there's a malacha, let's say the malacha of Zorea, which is to plant a seed, literally, and that was part of the malacha done for the Mishkan, but the concept of Zorea is facilitating plant growth, and therefore anything that facilitates plant growth is at least a tolda of Zorea. So watering a plant, or arranging for more light to go into a plant, or fertilizing a plant, all could be Zorea. Nothing to do with actually putting the seed in the ground. You can extrapolate based on the principle. Not quite the case when it comes to Hotzah, transferring. If something occurred, something which is like transferring, but not exactly like how it was done in the context of the Mishkan, so it won't be the Malacha d'Oraisa at all. Now, this is where Moshet comes in. So Moshet, handing over, was done in the Mishkan. What happened was they had these agalot, these wagons, which were used for transferring the krushim, these heavy boards that were used, and also in the Mishkan. So what they would do is they would take these two different agalot. Each agala, each wagon, was 10 tefachim off the ground. So the top of the agala is a rishus hayachidol to itself. Okay, and they would line two, one in front of the other, and they would then load up this heavy keresh, the board, onto, let's say, the front wagon, and then from atop the wagon they would hand it over to the second wagon behind it. Some Rishonim learn that the Keresh would span the two wagons, and some just understood it would go from the first and then onto the second. Either way, the point is that they were lined up front and back, and then the Keresh, the board, would go from the front to the back. In contrast, what was not happening, this is sort of the essential nub of the Mishnah, is that they were never passing Krashim from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaYachid across the Rishus HaRabim, not transverse the Rishus HaRabim. It was always in the same direction as the Rishus HaRabim, just, from one Yachid to the next, on the same side of the Rishus HaRabim, so to speak. And that being the case, the Mishnah is going to say that if you're doing Hoshata, you're doing Moshet, on the same side of the Rishus HaRabim, from one Rishus HaYachid to the next, over the Rishus HaRabim, even above Tent Fachim, above the Rishus HaRabim, even though we said in the previous Mishnah that above Rishus HaRabim, above Tent Fachim, is no longer the Rishus HaRabim, it's Mekom Patur, since in the context of the Mishkan, they did pass over these boards from the top of one agala, meaning above 10 tefachim off the ground, to the top of another agala, and again, above 10 tefachim off the ground, and they were passing over the Rishus HaRabim between the two agalot, but at a height of above 10 tefachim, since that was part of the assembly and reassembly of the Mishkan, one would be liable for that. So the Mishnah says, Ketzad, again, either Ketzad to reflect back on when Zrika one would be Chayev or not Chayev, the previous Mishnah, or We can leave that word out, ketzer, according to some of yourselves, and just now we're talking about a new thing called moshet, handing over. If you had shtei gezustros, you have two balconies, zu keneged zu, one on either side opposite the other of a rishus harab. So just think, you got Fifth Avenue in the middle of New York City, and you have two apartment buildings, and you have one on this side of Fifth Avenue, one on that side of Fifth Avenue, if there are any, yeah. And you have umoshit, and then one hands over, or vizorek, one throws across over Fifth Avenue, mezulazu, across the, over the street, so then patur. Then the transference over the rishus harab will be patur. The reason why is because if you're doing zrika, you're doing throwing it, so again, you're too high, and if you're talking about moshit, so that is not the way it was done in the context of the Mishkan. They didn't transfer by handing over, by traversing the rishus harab, just going front and back. So in both the cases, you'd be potter. And certainly there was no throwing anyways. No one threw krushim. So above 10 tefachim for throwing is always going to be exempt because there's no such thing as even moshit, of zorek ever, even of the krushim, even throwing, even of the boards, above 10 tefachim. Hayushtein b'diyota achas. If both of the balconies are on the same side of the street, so you have one apartment building on Fifth Avenue, and it has, you know, two neighbors' apartments, you know, 2A and 2B, and they have balconies near each other, and the between the two balconies is airspace. Beneath them is Fifth Avenue proper. Umoshet, and one passes something over, like let's say a broomstick, from 2A's balcony to 2B's balcony. So that's each balcony is Rishus Yachid, because it's going to be, you know, at least four almost on a side, 10 tefachim off the ground. So each of the balconies is Rishus Yachid, and one hands over the broomstick from 2A's balcony to 2B's balcony, then chayev, they'll be liable, because that is good old-fashioned moshet, as they had it in the time of the Mishkan. In the Midbar, they would transfer by hand the long krushim from one agalah to the next, on the same side of the Rishus HaRab, the same way these two people are passing over the broomstick, on the same side of the Rishus HaRab on Fifth Avenue, from one balcony to the next balcony. V'hazorek patur. But even those two guys, the two guys living on 2A and 2B, if they would throw the broomstick across from one to the next, so they would still be potter, because they would never throw the krushim, and therefore you haven't got like a total moshet, if you will. And we said that throwing above Rishus HaRab, above 10 tefachim, even though it's passed through the airspace, even Rabbi Akiva would agree that you're not liable for that because you're not in Rishus HaRab. Fine. Why is this the case? As I sort of already said in my introductory remarks, Shekach Haisa Avodas Levim, because the following is how the Levium would do their avoda in terms of transferring these krushim. Shtei agalos zu achar zu b'rishus harab. There would be two wagons, one in front of the other, one behind the other, in the rishus harab. Umoshitin hakrushim azulazu, and they would hand over. The Levium would hand over these boards from atop the first agala to the second of lo zorkin, but they would never throw those krushim. Therefore, if one is moshet and hands over from agalah to agalah on the same side of the rishus harab, so then you'd be liable. But if you would throw it or across the rishus harab, then you'd be patur. Period. Okay, new paragraph, like a new topic here in the Mishnah. New case. So the main case we're talking about here is that someone dug up, let's say, a well in the middle of the rishus harab. We're talking about a bore, just to be technical and correct here. In antiquity, they had three ways of having a water supply. They had a be'er, base aleph resh, that's really a well. A bore, base vav resh, which is like a pit or hole, was a cistern. And the difference is that a be'er, you would sort of dig into the ground and find water in the water table beneath the ground. Whereas a bore, you're not tapping into any water beneath the ground. You're simply making like a big storage hole. They would plaster it so it sort of holds water, and then when it rains, the rainwater would rain in and like it would be caught inside the bore for, say, keeping the cistern for later. The third possibility, of course, is an aqueduct to transfer water from one place to another place. In any case, here you've got a bore being dug, which is a pit in the middle of a rishus harab, but for whatever reason they're doing that. You can imagine, however, just for your imagination, probably how you imagine a well. Okay, so they're digging a hole in the ground, let's say for water purposes. So when you dig a hole in the ground, what happens is you got to put the sand that you dug out the hole in the ground somewhere. And the normal thing to do would be to put it around the hole to make like a wall, so like so no one falls in, and you can maybe store the bucket up there or something like that. So the point is, and we're going to focus on someone digging a big hole in the Rishus HaRam and then piling the sand that came out of the hole around the hole. So now the question will be the measurements that would constitute this new hole slash the rim of earth around it that you built up, the measurements to make that be Rishus HaYachid in the Rishus HaRam. So the Mishnah says, Chuliyat Tabor, the sand that you pile around the hole, Vasela, and the same would be true if you have a big rock in the Rishus HaRam, but let's get back to the rock later on. Shehein Gavon Asar Varach Ban Arba, if the rim of sand around the hole is 10 high and 4 deep, so then Hanoto Mehen Vanos and Al Gaban, if you take from the embankment, the sand rim, or you put onto it from or to the Rishus HaRam, then it'll be Chayav. Pachas Mekan, if it's less than the requisite 10 high and 4 wide, you'll be Potter. Okay, so the way the bartender has the picture and explains the Chiddush this Mishnah about the rim of the around the hole is that, let's say your hole is only 7 Tfachim deep. Okay? So a 7 Tfach deep hole doesn't make Rishus HaYachid. It has to be 10 Tfachim deep. But if you then pile up the earth around the hole, and let's say the pile that you make makes a rim that's 3 tefachim high. So now, from the top of the ridge, the rim, which is 3 off the ground, to the bottom of the hole in the well, or the pit, which is 7 tefachim below the ground, you have a total of 10. So the Bartel understands that you can add those two together and say, since the ridge, if you measure from the bottom of the hole to the top of the ridge, is 10 tefachim high, that will reach the threshold 10 tefach we need to make this to be Rishus HaYachid. And then again, assuming that the whole ridge is 4 tefachim across, so then you've got now something that's just 4 tefach wide and 10 tefachim deep, offset, which is by 10 tefachim, because you're including the depth of the well. So that can make the ridge, the rim around the hole, be Rishus HaYachid, that if one would take from the Rishus HaRam onto that ridge or vice versa, then they would be liable. Now, that's a big chiddush, of course, because if you think about it, from the outside of the well, all you're seeing is a small ridge above the ground. You're not seeing something that's really offset by 10 tefachim. It's like, in the numbers I gave, you have Rishus HaRam, then you have a 3 tefach high ridge emerging in the middle of Rishus HaRam. Normally that would not be a separate domain, but because of the whole on the inside of it that goes down another 7 for a total of 10, it becomes, the whole thing becomes a separate Rishus HaYachid all to itself. And that's a very big chiddush. That's what the bartender learns. It's surprising. Tosos doesn't like it at all. Tosos finds it hard to imagine that would be the case because it doesn't seem right since it's not really 10 tefachim high. Why would it be from the outside? And therefore, Tosos says the point here is that your ridge is 10, indeed 10 tefachim off the ground from the outside. Okay? But the point is that it's to get 4 tefachim across, it's from one edge of the rim on the one side of the hole to the other edge of the rim on the other side of the hole. So normally the rule is you need to have a 4x4 tefach surface in order to be Rishus HaYachid. Here you've got that 4x4, but there's a hole in the middle of the 4x4. So Tosos learns the Chiddush is that even though there's a hole in the middle, it's still considered 4x4 because it's normal to put like a plank, a board across the hole so you can sort of like attach the bucket or something. So the point is if you have the plank across there, that would be anyways enough, and therefore putting something on the ridge that's a 10 tefachim off the ground, since it's including the far side of the ridge 4 tefachim wide, is sufficient. The Bar Tanura would ostensibly say that's not necessary, and the whole Chiddush of the Mishnah is not about the width and the 4 tefachim to be 4 tefachim with a hole in the middle, but rather it's about the depth. And if you'll ask, well, how in the world could a ridge which from ground level is only 3 tefachim off the ground be a separate Rishus, or Rishus HaYachid, how could you include the hole below? So presumably he would answer that the public certainly would go around, even though it's 3 or even say 2 tefachim off the ground, the ridge around the well, still the public would circumvent that hole. Why? Because although the top of the ridge is just 2 tefachim above the ground, the next step's a doozy. If you'd walk straight over, traverse straight over the bore, you'd go tumbling in full 10 tefachim from the top of the ridge to the bottom of the hole. And that being the case, the public would walk around it, and therefore it has a din of being a domain all to itself. So we'll go with the Bar Tanura as our hero and say simply, even the Chiddush the Mishnah is that even if the ridge around the pit is just 2 or 3 tefachim high, you can add the depth of the well to reach a total of 10 to make that ridge be Rishus Yachidot itself, enough to make a person chayev if he put something from the Rishus Rabbim onto that ridge, or took from the ridge and put something into the Rishus Rabbim. As for the Sela, which we skipped, that was just a big like a rock in the middle of the Rishus Rabbim. Again, so if the rock is 10 tefachim high and 4 tefachim wide, it has a status of domain all to itself, even though it's in the middle of the Rishus Rabbim. Since people circumvent the rock, it has its own domain. And if you pick something off the ground in the Rishus Rabbim and put it on top of that rock has its own status and would be Rishus Yachid, and therefore you'd be doing a proper hachnasa, bring from Rabbim to Yachid, and be liable to chatas, and vice versa, if you take from the top of the rock and put it into the Rishus Rabbim, again, you'd be liable from taking from a Rishus Yachid and being motzi into the Rishus Rabbim.